Today, I'm going to focus on work that we've been doing with our community cancer partnership, and we've been focusing on HPV vaccination attitudes toward HPV vaccine, cervical cancer screening among African Americans. And in working with our partnership, I'm trying to make this go forward. Okay. No personal or financial relationships to disclose at this time. And before I get started, this project was supported by NCI with a Center for Excellence in Cancer Communication Research grant, as well as a Program for the Elimination of Cancer Disparities grant. In working with our partnership, when the HPV vaccine became available, there was a great deal of discussion within the partnership about whether or not there should be promotion of vaccination, particularly because of some fears that because of the age range for appropriate vaccination, that we would in fact be sending the message that sexual activity, early sexual activity, was appropriate. And so people were a little concerned and a little hesitant and reluctant. We continued our discussion within the partnership, but we also began to talk with people who were in our safety net provider network, as well as some of the researchers who had worked on the vaccine, as well as some of our providers. And at the same time, our largest funder in the state of Missouri, the Missouri Foundation for Health, began to offer the vaccination free of charge through our local federally qualified health centers, as well as Planned Parenthood. So the partnership decided that it would be reasonable for us to monitor the vaccination rate. And Planned Parenthood has been the largest distributor of the HPV vaccine in our region. And what they found is that where they were having the least success in vaccine distribution was among African-American girls in that 9 to 17-year-old age range. So we wanted to understand why and to determine whether or not it was appropriate for us to attempt to increase knowledge and understanding of the vaccine, as well as make efforts to increase the use of the vaccine, particularly since it could be provided free of charge, and it looks as if the foundation will continue to promote it free of charge. So why would the partnership be interested? African-American cervical cancer incidence rates exceed that of the general population, as do cervical cancer mortality rates. And if you look at the incidence rates, you can see that while they've been going down steadily, African-American rates are still considerably higher than all the other ethnic and racial minority groups, which actually are clustered very closely to each other. And you see a similar pattern for mortality rates. One factor in excess cervical cancer incidence and mortality is the human papillomavirus, which the vaccine targets. And African American women have an overall HPV prevalence rate of 39.2%. HPV 16 virus accounts for about half of all of the cancers where HPV is involved, and it is also highest among African American women, with a prevalence rate of 19.1% compared to 12.5% among white women. We believe, while HPV incidence is not captured in St. Louis, because of our unusually high sexually transmitted disease rates in the St. Louis area, we suspect that if we were capturing HPV infection rates, our HPV rates would also be high. And because the vaccine is prophylactic and is effective against the types of HPV virus that are associated with cervical cancer, it would seem prudent that where you have high incidence and high mortality, that you would act to increase utilization of that vaccine to provide protection for the population. It's, as I mentioned, it's recommended for girls as young as 9, primarily those 11 to 12 years of age, with 13 to 18 as catch-up ages for missed vaccination or the complete series. Now, that's the ideal pattern of use, although at this point it does appear that the vaccine would be useful for anyone up to age 18, as long as they were not sexually active. The reason for the recommendations is that it is not clear that the vaccine will be useful if a person has already been infected. And the major way to make sure the person is not infected, because HPV vaccination is not infection is not routinely surveilled, is to go with those individuals who are not sexually active at the time. Well, who are not sexually active. And I have to be careful, because when you talk with the young people, for them, if they are not having sex that month, that week, that year, they're not sexually active, which is not what we mean. Now, what most of the studies and most of the data that we have on a national basis about HPV knowledge comes from the Health Information National Trend Study, HINTS. And what has generally been found is a lack of knowledge and awareness about HPV among all ethnic minority women, with 67.5% of African American women compared to about 58% of white women reporting that they had not heard of HPV. Now, many people have heard of the vaccine, but that doesn't mean that they know what HPV is or why they're being asked to have their daughters vaccinated or to use the vaccine. Among those women, only 41.4% of the African American women believed that HPV was a cause of cervical cancer. And without that knowledge of that link, there's no reason to take another vaccine. And our data from Planned Parenthood is not the only data out there that says African Americans are currently reporting a lower utilization rate for the HPV vaccination. But this goes along with lower rates of vaccination for African Americans across the board. Whether we're talking influenza, pneumococcal, we have difficulty in increasing our vaccination rates. And while childhood vaccinations are very close to the general population, that's largely because it's mandatory for school entry. And without those mandates, we tend to have lower rates of vaccination. So based on the input from the PCAG group, our breast and cervical cancer group, we sought to identify the social and cultural factors that were influencing African Americans' parents' decisions about HPV vaccination, and to consider HPV vaccination promotion strategies. Now, we have one system that we worked with the foundation to develop at the time that they decided to provide the vaccine. But that system allows organizations in the community to tailor their promotion activities to the community, but it really doesn't address content needs or issues that are of concern to community members, and that's what our data will hopefully allow us to do. So we have been working using qualitative methods with parents who have daughters 9 to 17 years of age. We've conducted focus groups, we've conducted interviews, and we've done key informant interviews in the St. Louis SMSA region. We've been looking at structural barriers to vaccination, as well as cervical cancer and knowledge of pap smears, HPV virus and vaccine knowledge, as well as attitudes toward HPV vaccination, both social and cultural. And so what have we found? Largely, before I go into that, we have been coding our data using codes that were derived primarily from literature on vaccination and the existing literature from HPV, but revising our coding schemes as new issues emerge from our interviews, as well as our focus group themes, and then summarizing key themes and issues, and then creating a coherent sort of narrative of HPV social and structural concerns in the community. What we found is that participants really in the St. Louis area, similar to what's found nationally, have very limited knowledge about cervical cancer. And that's the starting point. They have difficulty telling you what cervical cancer really is, where it is. That's particularly true for men. And some people are like, well, why are you talking to men? Where men have relationships with their daughters and where they are involved with their daughters in those families, they have a strong say in vaccination. And so I think it's a mistake to automatically assume that we should not be talking with men. But their knowledge in this area is extremely limited, and much of that was based on experiences with family members where they had someone in their family who had been diagnosed with cervical cancer or had died from cervical cancer. So, but more important, knowledge of HPV is more limited. The majority of participants had never heard of HPV. Those who had heard of the vaccine were most often aware of that because they had contact with someone who reported to them that they had been infected, or through television advertising. And the television advertising is what typically sparks the discussion. But the television advertising gives very limited information. And sometimes the discussion that it sparks only leads to the transmission of inaccurate information. So, Some people who have viewed the commercials were aware of the link to cervical cancer, but they were unaware of the mode of transmission or the link to genital warts. So most people were startled when we provided information related to the fact that the virus is sexually transmitted, because that was an aha moment for them. They said, okay, so that's why. That's how it gets introduced to the body. That's why it's linked to cervical cancer. Because while the commercial linked it to cervical cancer, they had a hard time figuring out why a virus would produce cervical cancer. But that bit of knowledge helped them to see that link. They were also unaware that both men and women could be infected and could transmit. And that was surprising to them, because many women had felt that if their daughters were sexually active or became sexually active, if they were careful in selecting a partner, then they would be okay. But they weren't aware, because they didn't know how the virus was transmitted, they weren't aware that it wasn't just who you were partnered with now, it's who your partner's been partnered with, and so on and so on. They also weren't aware of the requirement for the series of three shots. They were typically seeing it as a single shot. Those who were in health clinics, the federally qualified health clinics, actually were better informed than those who were seeing private physicians. The physicians in the federally qualified health clinics, while not necessarily pushing the vaccine on their patients, were doing a tremendous job educating them. And those individuals could give me more correct information than those who had talked with their private physicians. Our participants were reporting mixed feelings about the vaccine. They had questions about cost, and cost was a significant barrier. And the vaccine does cost quite a bit. They were also concerned about potential side effects. Now, they were aware of the side effects that the commercials emphasized, but they considered those minor side effects that were related to immediate vaccination. What they were concerned with were those long-term side effects that we might not be aware of until the vaccine has been in long-term use. They were also unaware of who actually should be vaccinated. And they seem largely unaware that the vaccine was targeted toward adolescent females. They honestly believe that you could take it at any time, and so why would we push this on young girls? They were not aware that effectiveness has not been demonstrated for older women who are more likely to have been infected already. Even though the majority of people can throw the vaccine off, you are always prone to reinfection, and it is not clear what happens once you have been infected multiple times with the virus. And the effectiveness, they also were not aware that effectiveness had not been demonstrated for women who were previously infected. If the participants were seen in federally qualified health clinics, they had more information, as I said before, and fewer reservations about using the vaccination as a using this as a vaccination resource. Those people who had private insurance were less likely to have been approached by a provider and had strong reactions to any suggestion that they use the federally qualified health centers as a source of vaccination to defray costs. Their perceptions of the federally qualified health centers were extremely negative. Interestingly enough, that was not the perception of those who regularly use those health clinics. And one of the things we noticed was that individuals who regularly use the health clinics typically establish a relationship with a provider. And the image of people who had private insurance was that you could not establish a relationship with providers. And in fact, in some cases, we had with one health center in particular where they had difficulty keeping pediatric coverage. Some of those women reported they had removed their children from that clinic and were using other provider sources. However, they themselves continued to use the clinic because they had a relationship with a provider. So it's very important that we improve the perceptions of our federally qualified health centers, which are important resources in communities where access to care is limited. The scenarios under which people were most likely to vaccinate included a child over the age of 13. They preferred to do this at 13. They actually preferred when the child was sexually active, and that becomes a major problem for us because this is not the time that we want to use a vaccine. We really want that vaccine provided prior to sexual activity. If a physician recommended it, most people were not very resistant. They had some questions that they felt like they should follow up on, but generally they indicated their intent was to vaccinate. They wanted reassurance about long-term side effects, and they wanted some ability to address the source of payment. Our next steps, we're about to engage in a cross-sectional survey of 200 African-American parents of vaccine-eligible females and conduct more in-depth interviews to further refine our knowledge of exactly what materials should be included in our revision of our current information system on the HPV vaccination. We want to describe the individual characteristics, cultural attitudes, and social environmental factors that are affecting African-American parents' intentions to vaccinate with more information about insurance source, where their healthcare home is located, and how that should affect our messaging, as well as educational and income background, those social factors, as well as some ethnic identity data, as well as more data on cancer fatalism and those sorts of variables.